afternoon. This is Dino Herbert, and welcome to the Dino Herbert Show, Everyday Hero. Today's hero is a gentleman by the name of Scott Allen, who is a 20-year veteran technology entrepreneur. He starts micro-businesses. He has several joint ventures with entrepreneurs who are starting exciting projects, and he's also on several boards as an advisor of several startup companies. He's also the entrepreneur's guide for About.com. He's also the co-author of a book, The Virtual Handshake, and also The Emergence of the Relationship Economy. Thanks for joining me here today, Scott.
Great to be here, Dino.
It sounds like you're pretty busy and you've got a lot of things going. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what a day in the life of Scott Allen is?
Well, you know, I have bounced in and out of various entrepreneurial ventures throughout my life, but most of my career I've spent either being an entrepreneur myself or working hand in hand with other entrepreneurs. And honestly, when I left my last company, I decided I was just really tired of putting in 80 hours to 100 hours a week chasing someone else's dream, even being a right-hand man to an entrepreneur. And I am really bought into this whole idea of the, if you will, the freelance nation, how we as entrepreneurs can work together as individuals and as individuals in small businesses and micro businesses and create big business through collaborative structures that don't follow the traditional norms of, you know, building companies of 50 to 100 employees. Not to say that there's anything wrong with that, and there are certainly times where that's needed, but there are so many ways now in this day and age with the collaboration tools we have at our disposal and just with the willingness that so many of us have had to look at ways that we can come together for business without these traditional structures. And so that's, you know, I'm practicing what I preach, and you know, I don't actually, I don't even have a legal entity at this point. I am independent, but I have a lot of different things I'm involved in, both online micro businesses that I start and manage myself, my speaking business. You know, I do about 20 speaking events last year, plus joint ventures. I find things where I can go in and do the marketing work for a startup organization in exchange for revenue share, which is always more lucrative than hour-for-hour consulting, and also the whole expectation. Just the whole structure of it is different. You end up working entrepreneurially together. So, you know, end result is that these days I spend... You know, I get up in the morning and take my son to school and then get on and sort of map out my day, spend the day writing and networking and online in social media spaces, marketing, occasionally doing some copywriting, sometimes just doing content production, and go pick my kid up in the afternoon and have a family evening for a couple hours, and then get back on and do a little bit more in the late night. And I love it. Total freedom of time and place. I do work a lot of hours, but I work them whenever I want to, and gradually I'm working fewer and fewer hours as I'm setting up more and more passive income.
That is incredible. I mean, technology, when you were speaking about the technology and how we don't have to form traditional companies, we can just freelance with one another to create the entities and the businesses that we need to do. I thought of Tom Friedman's book from a few years back, The World is Flat, where,
right,
you know, he was talking about how technology has really changed the way things are operating, and businesses are being formed and entrepreneurs are starting companies in much different ways than they were even, you know, 10, 15 years ago. It is pretty incredible.
Right. And, you know, some of that is being able to just do things like micro outsourcing, where you can very easily find people for, you know, some of the either simple or not necessarily simple, but not your core competency and your core value creation, that you can hire, inexpensively. I'll tell you what, for whatever talk there's been about the issues of outsourcing, the ability to do offshore outsourcing has been, frankly, a huge boon to small businesses that have taken advantage of it, and therefore, it's a huge boon to the U.S. economy because, guess what, those entrepreneurs who save that money, entrepreneurs don't sit there and then just take and waste that money. They take that money that they save, and then they turn it around and use that to grow their businesses, which ends up creating jobs for things that require people with a local presence and a specialized skill set.
That's excellent. I thought of another book as you were talking there. I thought about a book that Carl Schramm wrote last year, I believe it was, The Entrepreneurial Imperative. He's the CEO of Kauffman Foundation.
Right.
And basically, his premise is that the rescuer of the U.S. economy is going to be the entrepreneur, is going to be the small business owner because of what you just said. By nature, we're pouring back into the economy because of what we're doing. I know that you have some thoughts on that. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that in terms of, this current climate, the availability of cheap technology. Do you think now's a good time for people to be starting a business?
Now is actually a phenomenal time for people to be starting a business, and there's several reasons for it. Well, for backing up just one step from that, though, is that for years, while small businesses have been employing about 50% of the non-government workforce, of the public sector workforce, most of the job growth, something like 70% of the job growth, has typically come from small businesses. Mm-hmm. And especially when we were looking at, when we're looking at the bailout situation and where the money's going to go, political commentary aside, one of the facts that most people don't realize is that over the 8 years of the Bush administration, they cut the budget of the Small Business Authority in half, more than any other government agency, and most people don't realize that unless they've been following that. And the fact of the matter is that even in this down economy, even if you look at even if you think that you're going to have a higher default rate on loans, the money put into the Small Business Authority that then goes out to loans and other aid to small businesses has a 10-to-1 leverage factor in the marketplace. In other words, for every dollar that the government spends by backing, securing, and administering small business loans and guaranteeing those loans to lenders, for every dollar, $10 is going into the economy for small businesses to grow their business. Now, that's a leverage factor that no other initiatives even come close to. So when you're talking you're talking about the people who have already proven that we can provide 70% of the job growth in the U.S. economy. Now, where do you think the best money is? Where do you think the money is going to be best spent in the economy if we want to drive job growth? It's going to be getting those SBA loans going as fast as possible and putting it back to at least the state that they were in 9 years ago, if not even higher. And then another thing that has been an initiative that's been talked about has been to eliminate capital gains taxes on early stage investment, seed round investment. That's essentially a 15% increase in ROI for angel and seed round investors. And that's a tremendous boost to the economy. And for all the talk about the concerns about taxing people making over, entrepreneurs making over $250,000 a year, I'll tell you what, if you're an entrepreneur and that's hitting you that hard, if you're making over $250,000 a year and that's hitting you that hard, shut up and reinvest in your company.
Put the money back
into your company and look at the big picture. You can live off of it, and you can take the money and you put it back into your company. And if you're putting it back into your company, then you're not paying the taxes on it, and you're contributing to the job growth, and you're contributing to your own long-term benefit, which is going to be a better investment. Sticking it in a 401k in the current, in the current economy, or an IRA or something like that, or investing it back into your company that you've already proven you can succeed with if you're making $250,000 a year.
Exactly right.
So I kind of don't understand the whining about that.
Yeah, and we'll always there'll always be a way to find, regardless of what the tax situation is, regardless of whatever current initiatives are in the government, those who are successful find a way to still benefit from it regardless of what the situation is. So I agree with you there.
I had somebody on I got like an automatic reply from someone on Twitter, that I had signed up to follow, and I guess they're like an investment coach, and they talk about real estate and commodities and all this kind of stuff, and they, they invited me to send back a message saying what my favorite investment strategy was. And I wrote back and I said, I invest in me and my ideas because there's a better return on investment on that than on anything else, on real estate, the stock market, or anything else. If you are an entrepreneur and you can't make more money by, I'll tell you this, if you are an entrepreneur and you can't make more money by reinvesting your money in marketing and promoting your own business or developing new products and services for your own business, if you can't make more money there than you can make in the stock market or in real estate, then quit.
Right.
Quit. If you don't know how to put that money to better use with your own ideas and your own business, you're not up to snuff, or you need to learn. Either quit or invest in getting a business coach who can help you figure out what you're doing wrong, because that's the whole point of entrepreneurship. The whole point of entrepreneurship is to exceed the growth, the base growth rate of the marketplace. That's the whole point of being an entrepreneur, is to, do you think you can do it better than what's out there in the marketplace right now?
Right, you're creating value by definition.
Right.
That's wonderful. Now, can you give any examples, of some of the companies maybe you're involved in or some companies that you're familiar with that are good examples of entrepreneurs who are paving the way, as it were, in today's economy in terms of helping to turn things around for the economy? You want to mention any specific examples in terms of what some people you know about are doing or some things that you're involved in?
Sure. One of my latest joint ventures, I'm working with a company called American Guitar Academy, and
okay.
They're based out of Portland, Oregon, and they have developed the guy took a how long have people been teaching guitar, right? So you think,
right.
Gosh, what can there be innovative in the space of teaching guitar? Well, he took and applied NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, to the learning model and set things out in a way that really changes the mindset. The only real barrier to learning is really self-imposed. So if you can help people break through the mindset issues, then you can rapidly accelerate their learning process. And over the past 6 years, they've had a couple of thousand students through their school in Portland, Oregon, that have proven that they can teach guitar, that they can learn guitar with this method 6 to 8 times faster than via traditional methods. So you've already got someone who has had a major innovation, right, and has proven it. He's got the case studies, everything else. Now, how do you grow that business? There's only so many people in Portland, Oregon who are going to take guitar lessons. Now, he could do the franchising route. He could sit there and sell franchises and go city by city and find people to do that. He could get a major capital investment and actually go and try to have company-owned stores. But he's like me. He's sitting there going, I don't want to run that huge company and the complexity of all that. And what they did was they experimented with doing this over Skype, over live video, live interactive video conferencing on the web. And
okay.
Guess what? It worked. Okay? Maybe it doesn't work for everybody. Maybe some people have a little issue with it, but they have got happy students in Hawaii and Alaska and places that are doing this. So now the trick is, all right, let's take this out to the world. Well, when you're talking about doing this virtually like this, all of a sudden, where's, you know, what's the barrier to growth? There's no limits. Okay,
right, right.
The only limit to the speed at which he can grow is how fast he can train, instructors, right? And
exactly.
he's got trained instructors there and ready to queue up. And you know, as long as we don't sit there and throw, you know, 5,000 new students at them in a week, he's got unlimited growth potential. Unlimited growth potential. He could have this and be teaching guitar to every single person who has a webcam, and wants to learn guitar. I mean, that's the size of the marketplace. Well, how is that? That's, you know, that's at least hundreds of thousands of students. And if we even get any kind of reasonable market share of that, you're still talking about a phenomenally successful business. And in the process, he's taking musicians and musicians who are, may have a tough time in this unstable economy, and he's creating steady work for them that they can do from home. And he's obviously starting with his people he's trained there in Portland, but he can hire the instructors from anywhere in the world too.
Exactly.
Right?
So
here's somebody in a very, very, very traditional hands-on business who didn't take the, didn't accept that, this can't be transformed. Not only did they transform the learning method, they also are transformed the entire delivery system and by leveraging technology to help them reach a nearly unlimited marketplace with zero capital. It requires zero capital for them to grow this.
Right, right.
Right? Total bootstrap. Every time you hit 20 new students, we got to start training an instructor. Right? That's
right.
It.
That's good. That's great. I mean, and that's a good example of, like you said, a traditional business where you wouldn't normally think that's something that could grow to that size, because it's something that typically you have to go to the instructor's place of residence or wherever his office is and sit down next to him as he teaches you guitar. But technology has given him the opportunity to take that worldwide. That's a good example.
Right. And from a marketing standpoint, the whole social media thing has opened this up, so we don't have to sit there and do, huge five-figure ad buys to start getting the word out about it either.
Right, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that segues into my next question. I was going to ask you about your book, The Virtual Handshake. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that book and what it's about and what the concepts you're trying to convey there.
Well, The Virtual Handshake was, we subtitled it Opening Doors and Closing Deals Online.
Mm-hmm.
And what we wanted to do was we wanted to both open people's receptivity to the idea that, that it doesn't necessarily require a literal handshake and eye contact to build trusted, valuable business relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so the focus of the virtual handshake, there's a couple of things. One of which is to give people the skill sets, and also to show some of the research that shows that online communication is not inherently inferior to face-to-face communication. It's just different. And I'll just give you a couple examples of that. A lot of people sit there and say, well, you just don't have the rich, the bandwidth of having all that. Having all that body language and all those nonverbal cues that you get when you're face to face. Okay, that's true. But guess what? You also, in the first 5 minutes after you meet each other, you can read each other's LinkedIn profiles and their About Me profile on their blog and their last half dozen blog posts. And I guarantee you, you have learned more about each other. And because you can both do that at the same time, whereas face-to-face, only one of us can talk at the same time. And I guarantee you, that first 5 minutes of both of you reading about each other, you've done the equivalent of about an hour of conversation.
Right. Yeah. You don't get that much information. I agree.
Right. And so where does the conversation go from there? It starts in at, wow, we've got a lot in common. I think there's an opportunity for us to work together. I love, you know, your attitude about, you know, about the economy and your kids and everything else. And I just, you know, and all, you've got this huge jump start on the relationship, you know. And so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different advantages to online communication when you learn what they are and how to use them effectively. So that's the first goal of the virtual handshake, is to help people through that process of building strong, trusted, valuable business relationships online. The other part of it is, you know, and this actually applies to face networking, but it just gets magnified when you talk about online networking. You know, most people, you know, the biggest problem with business networking is that most people network essentially randomly.
Right.
They like, you know, they just think, well, I guess I'm supposed to join my Chamber of Commerce, or, you know, I heard about BNI and that's great, and or, you know, this is on, you know, I'll think I'll go to this meeting because it's on Tuesday nights near my house.
Right. Yeah,
and online it's even worse because the number of choices is multiplied by 100. So do you know what social networking site most people join first?
I would assume Facebook, but that's,
well, it's a trick.
Different.
It's a trick question.
Uh-huh.
It's a trick question. The site that most people join first is the first one that someone they actually know invites them to.
That makes sense.
Right.
Uh-huh.
and so as a result, that's what they get exposed to, and that's where they start networking online, and there's never a thought given as to whether or not that site and the kind of activity that's on that site is what will really help support them in their current business goals. So the other big part of the virtual handshake is a way of looking at your network strategically in terms of we basically what we call the seven keys to a powerful network, and it's a way of applying a kind of metric to your network and figuring out where you need to focus your attention. Just for example, if you are selling enterprise software to the Fortune 500,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you obviously, you know, there is no point in being an open connector and connecting with as many people as you possibly can, because guess what? You got 500 potential clients, okay? You can probably narrow those down. Maybe it doesn't even apply to all of them, so you narrow it down to 400 or 300, and then you have entrenched competitors in half of those, and by the time you realize get down to it, you've got maybe 150 you know, that could ever even potentially be a deal for you. Now, obviously there's other value to networking, but still, if that's what, you know, but still that's, let's face it, we're here to make money. Networking is a blast. It's fun. We want to give and contribute in networking. That still doesn't, you know, if you don't keep that focus, that still ultimately you're trying to drive business to your site, guess what? You'll get results, you just won't get predictable, consistent results.
Right.
Okay,
right.
When you keep that focus on what your business objectives are and engage in the kinds of activities and meet the kinds of people that can help you achieve those goals, you get more results faster. It's as simple as that. And it's nothing, not about using people or anything else, it's just a matter of the power of focus rather than just being all over the place. And
right.
So if you're sitting there trying to do enterprise sales into a Fortune 500 company, you need strong relationships. You need people to like you and have trust and a high trust factor, high confidence in your expertise. That's a completely different situation than if you're trying to sell an info product to small business owners
right.
all over the world.
Right.
Right? And at that point, you know, at that point, for example, I mean, the number of people you reach is becomes important. You're trying to reach as many people as possible. You're trying to have a very high reputation for your credibility on expertise. Doesn't really matter if they like you or, I mean, you may not even talk to them face to face, right? So it may be largely a one-way relationship. So so the whole thing is that you know, that your needs are completely different in those situations. And therefore, the kinds of activities that you need to be engaging in are different. One person may be needing to spend time in, you know, in a lot more time in LinkedIn and groups that are focused, you know, that are maybe if they can get into groups that are for, you know, for senior executives, you know, some of the sort of more niche targeted high-end communities. And the other person may need to be sitting there and getting on every discussion forum they possibly can that's about small business and, you know, kind of finding their niche area specialty and just answering as many questions as they can about small business. Those are two totally different kinds of activities, and most people don't really sit there and give that any thought. And so that's one of the things, you know, that's the other sort of key goal of the book is to help people figure that out. So that they get the most bang for their buck or, you know, or for their, you know, the most value for the time that they spent in investing in building relationships.
That's excellent advice. So would you say that, I mean, I agree with you that most people are on social networks because they stumble upon them, no pun intended.
That's right.
That, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook just because I heard about it and perhaps someone invited me to that. It sounds to me what you're saying is that if an entrepreneur is on, you know, 10 different sites, a dozen sites, however many social sites they're on, that they should probably take a step back and evaluate each one of those sites that they're involved in to see whether or not is meeting their objectives after they've kind of come up with that game plan, if you will, in terms of marketing.
Absolutely. Now, a passive presence anywhere isn't going to hurt you. I would absolutely take the 10 minutes to put your profile on, to put your profile on just about anything that you have heard of that, you know, that's gotten some exposure. I mean, yes, you know, set up a profile on, you know, at least, you know, LinkedIn and Facebook, and at least LinkedIn and Facebook, I would say, set up a profile on. Twitter is not for everyone. Twitter is a fantastic tool. I have made over $10,000 directly as a result of Twitter and the American Guitar Academy that I was talking about earlier. I was introduced to them by someone I met on Twitter. So, you know, lifetime value of that deal, huge, right? So, yeah, absolutely, it is there and it does work for some people, but it's also a huge time sinkhole. So if you already have a very full schedule of, you know, 40 plus hours a week, you know, with your existing model, Twitter may not be for you. Okay, but having a passive profile and there's no value in having a profile on Twitter if you're not constantly contributing.
Right.
Okay, because nobody just goes and searches on Twitter based on profiles. They search based upon posting. So if you're not prepared to keep up the activity, it doesn't have any value for you. LinkedIn, Facebook, people do go search by profiles and by, you know, and go looking off of keywords and industry and those sorts of things based upon location. So you can be found in sites like LinkedIn and Facebook. So I would set up those passive presences. I'd recommend that for anybody. But as far as where you actively engage and spend your time, yeah, you need to give it some serious thought as to, you know, as to what your business is, where are the people that you need to reach actually engaged, you know, do you really do yourself? There is absolutely such a thing as being over engaged. I mean, just think about it. You know, the person, if you've ever been in a discussion group and, you know, that person other than the moderator who participates in every discussion, Not only do they participate in every discussion, they reply individually to every person's opinion who is posted in the discussion.
Right.
So they're posting 3, 4, 5 messages a day. And, you know, you're going, God, don't you have work to do?
You've got way too much time on your hand. Exactly.
You got way too much time on your hands. Yes, there is absolutely such a thing as being over-engaged.
Indeed. So those are excellent points. One, have a plan, because I do believe that in general, entrepreneurs, because it's kind of a new media, there's no marketing plan, as it were, to social media, and that's a good point. Have a plan. Two, don't get too engaged in it. And three, you know, if it makes some sense just to kind of have your face out there, do that if you need to.
Right. And try to spread yourself around a little bit. I mean, you know, you're trying to discover new people, and that means not just being with the same group of, with the same group over and over and over again. Now, there's value in that too, because obviously you strengthen relationships and you gain mind share with those people, and new people do come in and out of those groups. But you definitely want to be spread around a little bit so that you're and have some process, have some kind of strategy for how you're going to discover new sites, new groups, and new conversations. Because, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, you know, I remember, you know, I know that, you know, I'm active in the small business and entrepreneur space. And, you know, and there was sort of a cluster of communities that I was there and actively engaged in. And then all of a sudden, you know, you wouldn't think that somebody could just come out of the blue. But then all of a sudden, Startup Nation starts their community, right? And kaboom. Huge. And then Intuit started, Intuit started Jump Up, which was, their social networking site for, you know, their community for their businesses. And of course, they go and promote it to their huge install base, many of whom have not ever engaged in something like this. So all of a sudden, there's all these new people who it's like, you know, hey, Jump Up is the coolest thing since sliced bread, and they're all in there. And so,
right.
You know, so you've got to have you've got to have some way of finding those new audiences too. You need to include that as part of your social media strategy, is to discover new conversations and new communities, not just keep engaging in the same ones you're in.
Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Dino Herbert Show, Everyday Hero. Why don't you drop me a line and let me know what you thought about today's episode? You can also find me at dinoherbert.com for other books, recordings, and to book me to speak at your next engagement. It's always a pleasure having you here. And remember, I am passionate about people who are pursuing their potential.